We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And good morning. This is hour number two of Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are very glad to have you listening. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. In this hour of Focus, we'll be talking about homelessness in America. According to federal government estimates, on a single night in January of last year, 2009, more than 643,000 Americans were homeless. More than 6 in 10 were in shelters or transitional housing, but 37% were on the street. Those are figures that come from the 2009 Annual Homeless Assessment Report to Congress, which has just been issued in June, from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. We'll be talking about some of these numbers and also try to talk a little bit about the Obama administration's plan to address the problem of homelessness in America. And our guest for this hour is Neil Donovan. He's the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C. He's been working on this issue, working with and for people who are experiencing homelessness for 26 years now. He's been a street outreach worker and also executive director. His previous work includes administering transitional housing programs for the Pine Street Inn in Boston. That's the largest homeless service agency in New England. He also administered employment and community programs at the Shattuck Center in Boston. He's worked as senior advisor at the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness and also was the first director of the Center for Capacity Building at the National Alliance to End Homelessness. And he is joining us this morning by telephone. And we certainly welcome questions. We want people to be brief, please, and stay on the topic, but your questions are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And also, people who are listening can send us emails at will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, certainly people who are listening can make their contributions. And Mr. Donovan, hello.
Hi, David. Thanks for inviting me to Focus.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us. This maybe can be a little confusing here. I just want to make sure people understand that we are probably talking about some of the most recent data on homelessness that we have, and this is part of this report that was presented to Congress by HUD. And because of the way things work, it takes time to gather data and to collect it and to analysis and so forth and so on. Now, this report just did come out in June, but it is based on numbers from 2009. So just to get that all square in people's minds.
That's correct. Yeah.
And you know, having said that, and we can talk about some of what is in this report. But you know, if I just ask you a very general kind of question about, all right, now here now at this point in July, 2010, where do we stand now with this issue of homelessness in America, particularly if you look back over the period of time that you've been working on this issue?
Sure. Homelessness does cycle, and I think it's important to look at our history, both the kind of new state of homelessness since the early 1980s, but also just that we have had the condition of having the unhoused with us since before we were a country, and so we kind of cycle through different ideas and responses about every half century, and we're kind of coming to the point right now where we're about 30 or so years into a 50-year cycle. And the reason that I'm bringing that up is that what's interesting is that we kind of have an evolution of a response. And then we look at this problem anew, and I think we're coming to the point right now where we have exhausted a lot of the current thinking about homelessness, and that really kind of came out of a real rise in persistent poverty and people who were homeless and on the streets. A lot of that came out of deinstitutionalization. Over the last 30 years, what we've found is that the number has grown, and it's grown at a fairly constant rate by about 10% or so. So what we're seeing now is that the number has plateaued over the last 2 or 3 years, but the face of homelessness is changing. The Bush administration, throughout the two terms of George W. Bush, invested a lot of time and resources in one subpopulation, and that was the chronic homeless. So those numbers did, in fact, go down. At the same time, the other subpopulations that were ignored or were not the area of focus increased, and most specifically and most profoundly, that was felt among the families, homeless families, and those individuals who were episodically homeless, those individuals who kind of came in and out of homelessness rather quickly. And what we found with that population was the average length of time was just about 30 days that somebody experienced homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I guess that seems to me to be one of the striking things that we have seen as the nature of the problem changes, or at least if you look at who it is that's affected. Because I think that there would have been a time where the idea of the homeless person, you said, well, who is the homeless person? And I think the idea in most people's heads would be this would be most likely a single man, and that in addition to whatever kind of challenges he faced, this may also be someone who had mental health issues or substance abuse issues or both. What really has changed is that in shelters and sometimes on the street, what we are seeing is we actually are seeing more families. We're seeing women and children in greater numbers than we have seen before. So that says, well, this is actually a more complicated kind of picture than maybe at one time you would have imagined. And maybe people still think have this stereotyped idea of what is a homeless person, and they're thinking about the first kind, that guy, and don't really appreciate the extent to which this other group, families, women and children, have become part of the problem too.
Sure. I don't want to complicate this issue so much that your listeners kind of get lost. But there was a recent report that came out from the General Accountability Office, used to be referred to as the General Accounting Office, GAO, and they said that a common vocabulary could really help agencies at the federal level with collaboration and more specifically with the collection of data, having that data be consistent across all federal agencies. The information that you have been referring to is information that is collected by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. One of the problems with using their numbers and only their numbers is that it really doesn't paint an accurate picture of homelessness in the United States. And a very a good example is that the school systems around the country are required by federal law to report how many of their children are homeless. And in the past year, so I want to compare apples to apples, in the year that you were talking about, last year, 2009, the school systems said that there were 770,000 children that were unhoused, homeless. Of that number, 660,000 were not part of the HUD count. So of the 770,000, 660,000 were not part of the HUD count on homelessness. That's a fairly significant omission or gap in the collection of data. And that's why it's important that all federal agencies describe and understand and define homelessness with one definition, and they all collect data. And of course, as you can imagine, you know, if one federal agency sees it very differently than another, then you are going to be able to say that, you know, in the world of HUD, 64% of the population are these individuals who stay in shelters and are single men. But when you describe it differently, when you describe it through the eyes of the Department of Education, then what you're going to start to see is that there are, you know, 80,000 some odd homeless families across the United States with, you know, two and three people in every family. So it's a complicated issue that we're trying to not only make sense of, but also describe to your listeners and the general, you know, American population, because they, as taxpayers, really deserve to understand not only what the problem is, but what they can do to help to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, the report presents some very big numbers, and they try to do a couple of things. They did this, have this number that I referred to, the point in time estimate.
Right.
So this was on, they picked one night, January 2009, and you could just imagine how difficult a task to actually come up with this number would be. But essentially they said, okay, on this one night in January, they estimated how many people were in shelters and how many people were on the street. And so they came up with this figure. It's 643,067 sheltered and unsheltered homeless people nationwide. More than 6 in 10 who were homeless at a single point in time were in emergency shelters or transitional housing. And then in the words of the report, 37% were unsheltered on the street or, quote, in other places not meant for human habitation. So here, that's a big dramatic number. And, of course, you have to ask, well, given the difficulty of coming up with that number, how accurate that is. How useful is a number like that?
A little bit of context. The federal agency that really should be counting the homeless is the same federal agency that counts you and me, and that's the Census Bureau. And they have spent a lot of time, a lot of energy, and many hundreds of thousands of dollars in federal court protecting their right to abdicate their responsibility of counting the homeless. And they have won twice in federal appeals court the right not to count the homeless. And the reason that they give is that it's a population that is just too difficult. It's too transitional. They are too difficult. The areas that they focus are not address specific, which is the way that the Census Bureau collects its data. So there are two examples where a federal agency says we can't do that. And then last month, the General Accounting Office comes out and says, given the fact that the Census Bureau doesn't collect data, then this responsibility has been passed down to a number of different federal agencies. But the one federal agency that really is being asked to report on it is HUD. And what they say about that is that the point-in-time count, this is the General Accounting Office speaking, that the point-in-time count doesn't recognize that individuals and families move in and out of homelessness and that their experience can vary in length of time, and the counts are likely to undercount and miscount. So that's actually the federal government's assessment of itself, mm-hmm. rather than you know, a national advocacy organization being critical of the federal government.
Yeah.
So I think that may answer your question.
And they do, just I suppose, you know, the other side of this is that they actually also have tried to do, HUD in this report has tried to do a one-year estimate, at least, of people who are in shelter.
Sure.
And the figure they come up with is something like 1.56 million people, they say, used a shelter or transitional housing program during that 12-month period. So that, you know, that could have been for a short period of time. And I don't know how that counts people who are in and out, if that's 1.56 distinct people or how it is that they do that.
Right. Those are all complicating factors. We don't know whether or not it's, counting the same person more than once. There's all sorts of problems. What we do know is, I think, two things. One, that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has an enormous task that they are held responsible for, and that is to provide the resources and services and oversight of the shelter system and some of the housing in this country for those who are both unhoused and precariously housed. And they do a fairly good job at that. And I think that should be stated first. And then the second thing is that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development ought to start changing their message to "we take care of America's homeless" to "we take care of those who we are funded to serve," which is a fraction of the overall homeless population. It doesn't take that much longer to say, you know, Americans are smart people, they'll understand the issue, but simply to just do kind of a shorthand explanation really does the issue a disservice. It certainly does the population a disservice, and it doesn't tell the taxpayer the true story of homelessness in America.
Well, one of the things that comes out of this report is what they seem to be saying is that something that you could point to as something of a success is that it seems that there are more people in shelters and that there are fewer people actually on the street. And do you think that that's actually right?
Difficult question. And the reason that it's a difficult question to answer is that your question is, are there in fact fewer people who the average citizen sees as symbolic of the homeless person, you know, kind of destitute looking, rather kind of down on their luck, oftentimes either in the throes of substance abuse or mental health crisis. Those individuals, we have invested as a country a lot of money in putting them into housing. The problem with that is those individuals don't just stay in their apartments. That's just not human nature. What they tend to do is they tend to go back out into the areas where they hung out when they didn't have housing. So what is the net gain here? Is the net gain that an individual has a place to rest his or her head at night? Yes, and we've made significant progress in giving people a place to rest their head. Is the overall kind of social change what we were hoping to achieve? I don't think so, because I think what's happening is there's still that visible sign of people who are persistently poor, who are in crisis, and who need services. So I'm trying to answer your question as honestly as I can.
Sure. Neil Donovan is our guest. He is Executive Director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, based in Washington, D.C. They certainly have a website if you'd like to find out more about that organization or about the issue. Also, if you go to the website of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, you can look at this most recent report on homelessness that we've been talking about. And questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. And you may also send your questions along by email. Write will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a caller here to bring in Effingham on our toll free line. Line four. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, David. We're addressing symptoms again, in my opinion. I wonder if your guests could give us an overview of homelessness and poverty. I judge from the end of feudalism. And the other question is, if he knows about, the thing I heard was 90,000 people in Los Angeles, I think, in and around homeless, some sheltered, some not, but the figure was 90,000, which just blew me down. Thank you.
Right. Well, I don't think we can expect you to talk about poverty from the beginning of history, but anything in the way of a kind of a perspective on this, I guess, that you think would help people.
Sure. And I appreciate your caller's kind of recognition that there are many different sides and perspectives that we need to look at this issue in. When we first began arriving here as a European population, so I'm not talking about the indigenous people, but as a European group of people, the communities responded in the same manner that they did when they were in England. So they usually would donate a certain percentage of their revenue or resources and then give it to an individual, and those individuals were sometimes referred to as almsgivers. What they would do is they would provide for people who couldn't provide for themselves. And those were usually people who were either physically or mentally incapacitated. You know, as I said, it kind of goes in these 50-year cycles. You know, the next point that might deserve notice is after the Civil War, there were a number of orphans and widows, as well as soldiers who had been injured and incapable of making a living. So the federal government, for the first time, responded by offering households a certain stipend for taking in either an injured soldier or a person who was a widow or an orphan. That's the first time that the federal government really kind of responded. And then in the 1800s, there were institutions that started to be created, hospitals and the like. What we were responding to there were, rather than the economics of the situation, we were responding to the health of the individual. So a lot of times there were institutions that were responding to people with alcoholism or mental health issues or chronic health conditions. The next kind of cycle, and this was in the 1970s, we were responding to the economics of the situation where people were unhoused. So we were kind of were lumping them all together. So that's kind of a very, very quick kind of chronology of homelessness. Kind of addressing the caller's question about the 90,000 in L.A., You didn't get your number wrong, and it is as scary and alarming as the number might cause your listeners to imagine. The trips that I've taken to Skid Row each time are just shocking that this kind of homelessness occurs in the United States. You walk down Skid Row, and there are literally thousands of individuals, tent after tent after tent. I've spent time in other countries, in Kenya and other communities where poverty is dire. This certainly parallels that. Substance abuse is rampant. There are examples of hospitals just dumping people, literally ambulances pulling up to the side of the road and discharging people in their johnnies out onto Skid Row, and it's alarming. It's shocking.
Just to return to one point in time for a moment, it seems to me that the point when homelessness, the issue really started to get a lot of attention was in the 1980s.
Right.
And perhaps in part it was at a time when some people were doing very well then others were starting to say, well, let's pay attention to the people who are not. And I guess I wonder whether, in fact, that what was happening at that point was something happened and the number of – there was truly a dramatic increase in homelessness, or whether it also was that there were more people who were making an effort to focus attention on that issue. And maybe, in fact, it was both those things.
It was both of those things. In addition to that, the issue of deinstitutionalization occurred primarily in the 1970s, and so a lot of these issues take time. There's certainly kind of a gestation period where people take advantage of perhaps staying on a couch with a family member, or staying in the basement, or staying in some place, as they say, not meant for human habitation. And eventually those bridges start to get burned, those opportunities start to fade away. And then there are kind of these patchworks of a lot of time they're faith-based organizations and community organizations who offer their goodwill and who try to house maybe a dozen or more people. That all of a sudden starts to become an economic burden. The numbers start to grow, and that's why it took about 8 to 10 years for it to become a large enough problem that we really needed to awaken ourselves to this social ill that was truly getting out of hand and required a national response. So it was the problem was growing, and the federal government was really awakening to the problem and trying to develop and respond to that problem through appropriation of resources and the creation of a response, which takes time.
We are at our midpoint here. Our guest is Neil Donovan. He's executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C. It's an issue that is homelessness, something that he's been working on for a long time. He's had positions ranging everything from street outreach work to executive director. He, in some of his past work, was the administrator for transitional housing programs for the Pine Street Inn in Boston. That is the largest homeless service agency in New England. Also administered employment and community programs at the Shattuck Center in Boston. Questions are welcome from people. Again, please keep them focused on the topic and be as brief as you can. That way we'll get in as many callers as we can. You're sharing the space with others. Do keep that in mind. And we'll go to Piatone for next caller here. Line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. How do you keep track of the homeless? Because I know I do a lot of work with Lazarus House and Habitat for Humanities, and it's a hard thing out here because there's families that have been displaced because of the they lost their home and whatnot. They're living out of their cars, and it's like a caravan. The other thing we have to go by is a P.O. box number, and most of the time you can't find them. I know where I live, there's a railroad tracks, a viaduct, and we find a lot of people living under the streets where the trains are. But what I've found in my experience, you can't find people. It's next to impossible. So I don't know how you can get an accurate count, accurate account of this. And secondly, all these shelters around here and up north in the northern part of the state are so packed full of people that it – they've had to turn people away at night. So I actually think we need to either find an old warehouse. There's warehouses and commercial buildings that are vacant. Well, I just don't understand why we can't use some of them to make the room more available for some of these people. It just seems like it's a shame that so many people are being left out of there. And I'll get off and listen to your response. Thank you.
Well, can you make some comment on that?
Sure. The answer to the question, how do you count every homeless person? The answer is you can't. And efforts are made to do that through tracking individuals. HUD uses what's referred to as HMIS, the Homeless Management Information System, which is when an individual enters a shelter or a program. They collect individual identifying information on the individual, and that's what's used to give you the numbers that you were quoting at the beginning of the show. It's an unfortunately flawed method of tracking and counting individuals, but it's the system that the federal government is using. And unfortunately, it's the system that other federal agencies are deferring to. So when the Veterans Administration wants to know how many homeless veterans there are, they aren't going to do a count themselves. They're going to go to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and say, how many homeless veterans are there. Just as an example of why that's a problem, what we're finding anecdotally in the National Coalition for the Homeless is about to start to do some on-the-ground research here is that in a lot of shelters, women aren't asked that question, aren't asked the question about whether or not they have any military background, whether or not they've had any experience in the military, because it's a slightly more complicated question than simply, are you a veteran? Because there are some people who might have been generally discharged, dishonorably discharged, but they are still have military experience. And the reason that's important is because there are resources out there specifically for female veterans and for female soldiers and who are homeless. And we need to get that those resources not only on the ground but into the hands of those who need it. So here's an example where a flawed data collection system not only doesn't provide an accurate number in the aggregate, but what it also does is it's really doing a disservice to you know, large groups of people who have resources coming to them.
And so the other I guess the other question essentially is about the availability of shelter space and whether there is enough space in emergency shelters and in temporary housing for people who really need it.
Well, the federal government, unfortunately, is catching this bug that's going around, and it's called compassion fatigue, and a lot of people who I grew up with who were you know, kind of left of center and believing that you know, that the homeless should have extraordinary resources are experiencing compassion fatigue. And now that they're in their 50s, they're saying, you know what, we've been giving, we've been contributing for so long, and the problem isn't going away. At some point, you know, I'm just going to throw my hands in the air. And it really is quite shocking to hear that from people who for years kind of were your best supporters. But I think we as a national organization need to recognize that and need to have an answer for these people. But the federal government is also getting fatigued, and I think what's happening is that they are saying, putting money after money after money into shelters doesn't do anyone justice. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to start to bend the focus away from shelter more towards prevention and permanent housing. Well, that's all well and good, and we do need prevention, and it is actually a very effective way from stemming the tide of increasing homelessness. And actually, the Obama administration put $1.5 billion in stimulus money towards homelessness prevention and rapid rehousing, and they've been able to actually help a couple of hundred thousand people as it relates to homelessness prevention. But the problem is that there are still hundreds of thousands of people who need shelter, and we can't just simply say we're tired of that and we tried and we failed. You can't just simply abandon a huge cross-section of the American people who are down on their luck, who are most in need.
As you say, the administration has announced a plan, and it's just been, I think, about a month ago,
right,
visually that they put this out. And I want to talk about that, but I want to come back to something else, and I don't know if this is – maybe we touched on this a little bit, and I'm not sure how – if you can answer this question. But I'm interested in this. If you look at people who were homeless, say, last year, and I'm just wondering if you said to them, how many times have you been homeless without housing in the past, say, 5 years, something like that? And I wonder how many people might be a part of something that you would call the chronic homeless, and how many people would say, well, actually, before now, never. And I'm wondering, indeed, how what's been happening with the economy, say, since about 2007, 2008, has really contributed to the problem, particularly for families. So has there been an increase in, say, first-time homelessness, or maybe that category that you label housing insecure, which is kind of this in-between thing?
Sure. That number has definitely increased. Those who are at risk of homelessness has definitely increased, and the picture and the explanation for homelessness has also changed. Before 2007, when you would ask somebody, you know, how you became homeless, the answer foreclosure was quite rare. And now it is actually, you know, accounting for, you know, granted it's single digit, but, you know, it's a significant number, and enough to pay attention to. We at the National Coalition for the Homeless issued a report on the foreclosure crisis. It not only is new to the shelter workers, so they need to kind of be informed and educated. But it also changes geographically. One of the interesting statistics that we found was in the Southeast, when we talked to people, fewer than 5% of the people who were homeless as a result of foreclosure had spoken to anyone about the issue, a lawyer, a banker, someone about how they could have prevented this from happening. We just found that to be alarming, that they just simply defaulted on their loan, closed up shop, moved out, and moved into a shelter.
Well, let's talk with someone else here. Caller in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hello. I'm John Sullivan. I'm the executive director at the Center for Women in Transition in Champaign, a transitional homeless shelter for women and children. And I'd like to say thank you in terms of bringing this issue onto focus, because it's an issue obviously close to my heart. I kind of wanted just to say that one of the difficulties that we have in Illinois is that the HPRP, Homeless Rapid Rehousing Funding, has basically been supplemented into the state funding system to supplant funding that would have been provided to through the state for homeless prevention. And so they're just using it as replacement rather than added dollars, which is a difficulty. I have lots of questions, but I suppose one of my my biggest questions is in terms of what does Neil think about the HEARTH Act and its definition of homelessness?
Quickly to your point about states taking the money that was meant for homelessness prevention and rapid rehousing and just simply supplementing their state dollars. It's a real disservice, and it wasn't the intention of the funds. It truly was meant for homelessness prevention and rapid rehousing, and I would go to my regional HUD office and ask that be looked at, because that's not the intended purpose for those funds. And the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is going to be looking at your state and seeing how they responded. And if the answer is we just used it to supplement our overall state funding, HUD and the overall taxpayers are not going to be happy with that as an answer. As far as the HEARTH definition, people may or may not know that each year the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, who is one of the largest federal agencies that handles homelessness funding, issues awards through a grant process. Previously it was referred to as the McKinney Act for the Homeless, because McKinney was a congressperson who passed away as a result of an action to bring attention to the issue of homelessness. And then it was later changed to the McKinney-Vento Act, and this year it became the HEARTH Act. Each time it is rewritten or reauthorized, it changes a little bit. And the Hearth Act has changed in that the definition of homelessness has been changed slightly to include people who are doubled up in some circumstances. So the National Coalition for the Homeless, affirms HUD's willingness to expand the definition to truly capture all those who are homeless. Is it where we want to be? Is it where we need to be as a country? No, it isn't. And I don't even think it's truly the baby step that we need to take. I think it's progress, but I think what we also have to do is we have to stop talking about counting individuals as single units, because it's, first of all, impossible, and it doesn't serve the taxpayer and the country well. And we need to start talking about statistical sampling, which is something that the Census Bureau uses, academics use around the country and recommend. And what that will do is that will get us a better idea of the population, and then we can go about the business of serving them well, rather than spending a lot of money and a lot of time and attention in figuring out what an inaccurate number is.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Sure, John.
All right. Thank you for the call. Other questions are certainly welcome. In this hour of Focus, we're talking with Neil Donovan. He's the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C. And that's what we're talking about, homelessness in America. He has talked some about some of the most recent figures that have come out from the federal government about the issue. And also we'll talk a little bit here about some of the administration's proposals to deal with the problem. And questions, again, are welcome, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you may also send along your comments by email. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. I do want to have you talk a little bit about the proposals here that now that have been made by the Obama administration. They have put out a report, and again, I don't want to snow people under with various kinds of reports, but this is, again, something that you can read. They put this out in something they call Opening Doors, Federal Strategic Plan to Prevent and End Homelessness. And what they say is the goal here is to end veterans and chronic homelessness by 2015 and end homelessness among children, family, and youth by 2020. So given the kind of numbers we're talking about, this is very ambitious. And as you've said, that it seems that their emphasis here is on addressing people's needs. It does seem to be largely about prevention, because what they're talking about is things like doing things to improve people's health and their economic security, and then to provide housing. Which makes me think particularly about the thing that many people have said, that really the homeless problem really is a housing issue, in the sense that we simply don't have enough quality, safe, affordable housing in this country, particularly for families. What part in all of this does that play?
It plays an enormous part, and it's probably the principal solution and at the root of the problem. So homelessness, in a snapshot answer, the causes of homelessness are a lack of affordable, accessible housing, health care, and income, both earned income and benefit income, that allows somebody to sustain themselves independently. So you flip that coin over and you say, well, what's the answer then? And the answer is that we need to create a sufficient number of housing units to the size and the scope of the problem. So we can't simply set goals that will allow us to fund certain subpopulations, because that's not the way you're going to solve a social ill, because while you're paying attention to one subpopulation, all of the other subpopulations start to complicate, and grow in ways that you can't forecast and don't know. And that's what happened when we focused on the chronic population. Other populations started to increase and become far more complicated and costly than we could have imagined. The reasoning is that if you pay attention to a subpopulation, you can kind of solve that, and then with the savings, you can move on to solving other populations. That's just really faulty thinking, because in the case of the chronic population, what we find is that even those that we are housing, there's no cost savings in the immediate future. So when you move on to now address veterans and families, you can't take the savings from the chronic homeless population and apply it to the others, because you still have to pay for the housing, you still have to pay for the services for the chronically homeless that you housed. So it truly is a challenge that I think that this plan kind of fell into. It fell into one of the problems of the previous administration, thinking that you could solve homelessness by looking at certain subpopulations. And you know, I have to say that the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness was really put into a difficult position, because the president wanted to respond to the needs of veterans as he should. And so he drew attention to that issue by saying, you know, there should no longer be homeless veterans, and I want to end it on my watch, so let's do it in 5 years. So that kind of put that onto the USICH plate. And then when the chronic issue started to reduce and the homeless providers that take care of families started to say, hey, what about us? Then the USICH had to start paying attention to families. So what we find is that the report really looks at subpopulations, and the National Coalition for the Homeless says it is impossible to reduce or end homelessness by looking at subpopulations. You have to look at all of the homeless in order to end this problem. And that's one of the challenges that we find with the report. The other challenge that we find with the report is that the federal government requires local agencies. John called in a little while ago. He runs a nonprofit organization. He is required to be very, very specific about how many people he serves, how much it's going to cost, what are his goals. Well, the federal government in its plan did not put numbers, did not put dollar amounts, and did not put names and agencies who are accountable and responsible for solving this problem. And that's what a plan has to have. Somebody needs to be responsible for this, either to get the pat on the back if it succeeds or to take responsibility if it fails. We need to know how much it is, because we need to know whether or not we need more or whether we have enough. And these pieces of information were omitted from that report, and that's disconcerting.
Well, isn't ultimately the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development the person who should be the point person on this, or do you need to actually appoint somebody to be the point person on this?
I think that there are 19 federal agencies who have homelessness in their portfolio. I think each one of them needs to consider themselves responsible for their part of the solution. The Interagency Council is meant as an organization to broker and to bring those federal agencies together. Ultimately, it's the president's responsibility. It's his watch. It's his country. As far as being responsible for solving its problems. So I would say, we can give the president a lot of credit for some of the things that he's done, and at the same time, and I'm an advocate and a supporter of his, but I do think that it's his watch, and we need to hold him accountable.
Well, so we have about 2 minutes here left. Now, what would you like to see happen? And your organization, what would you like to see happen?
What we would like to see is instead of dividing up the pie with a bowling ball and making a mess of it by saying one population will get a certain amount of money and another will get a certain amount of money. We consider homelessness a national problem with a national solution. We need to bring the sufficient resources to bear to solve this problem. We bring resources to bear to solve other social problems. We can do it with this one. And we need to set a reasonable timeline. There are plans in place. We need to stop making plans. We need to start building housing units to the size and the scope of the problem. So we can't kid ourselves into thinking that if we produce 50, 100,000 units of housing, we're going to solve the problem. We need to think big because the problem's big. And provide resources for the people while they are in our care. I think those are 2 points.
And how much are we spending now, and how much do you think we need to spend?
Overall, with homeless services, the overall homeless dollars. Sorry for not having this on the tip of my tongue. I should have that. I believe it's somewhere around $1.7 billion through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. It's far greater when you take into account all of the other federal agencies' budgets. And I'm just going to say that I don't have that piece of information at the tip of my tongue right this moment.
Well, if people are interested in reading more on this issue, one place you can go is you can look at the website for this organization, the National Coalition for the Homeless. That's nationalhomeless.org. They're on the web. And the guest this morning, Neil Donovan, he is Executive Director of the National Coalition for the Homeless based in Washington, D.C. And Mr. Donovan, thank you very much for talking with us today.
You're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.